Accession number 22688, reel 3.
Ask me the right questions, you see.
Enid Grant, this is Enid Grant, and we're on reel 3. Enid, you were telling me, and very interesting it is, about the drug situation, how you use quinine, that was available.
Well, yes, quinine for malaria, and we had the sulfur drugs in those days, sulfguanidine, sulfanilamide, and those sort of things. The usual aspirin and cough mixture, and I don't remember any fancy drugs, not at those days.
Did you ever have M&B?
Yes, well, that's sulfanilamide, and they were M&B drugs, yes.
But not penicillin at that time?
Not yet. When I got up to Imphal, that came in later. That was in 42, 43.
So, when you were on the island, were you still having your little parties? There was some social life as well as the...
Very little on the island. I didn't tell you that I took with me, wherever I went, my gramophone. It was an old teak, his master's voice, and two cases of records, or Rachmaninoff and the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies and Bing Crosby and Glenn Miller and all those records, and I used to play them at every opportunity, and even the locals loved to listen to them. I spent a night at Chittagong on my way to the Arakan, and I had the gramophone on, and everybody loved me. In those days you didn't have wirelesses so much or any form, and they all loved to hear it. And what was very interesting was that it brought out the spiders. We had a lot of insects every time, but when the gramophone was on, the spiders would all emerge and sit round it, which interested me very much. And in later years, I made inquiries about these arachnids, and I believe they do it when people play the piano. They will come out, and it's not the music. It's apparently the vibrations that attract them, so I've been told. But it happened over and over again out there, because there were a great many spiders, a great many snakes, a great many scorpions, a great many all sorts of things.
And I suppose you had bigger animals as well. You spoke about seeing a leopard on the road.
A tiger, on the road, yes. Up to Shillong. He was lying dead on the side of the road, which was, yes, very sad. He's a beautiful animal.
Did you have to be careful about the wildlife?
Not really, because the camps were a lot of people about, and it was mainly snakes and those sort of things, and mosquitoes and ticks.
Did you keep well, Enid?
I kept very well, all through, and surprisingly I didn't get malaria. In those days we hadn't any anti-malarial drugs, not at that time. For recreation, we used to go, and there was a little hill along the coast where the ration boats used to come in. We used to go and sit up there and watch the ration boats coming in, and we'd watch the crew throwing all the loaves of bread out. And you'd see the ration boat with all these green loaves, because they used to go rotten with the humidity. And you'd see this long line of green loaves bobbing along behind the ration boat. There wasn't much to do except the gramophone, and fortunately we found a lot of our friends there. The ones from Northwest Frontier of India had been posted down there, so there were people we knew. What else happened there? It rained and rained and rained, and you were always in...
Was this the monsoon period?
And things. Yes, it's an awful wet place. Yeah. We wore green battle dress. I don't think I told you, maybe.
No, I was going to ask you, did you have a uniform?
Yes, we used to wear khaki dresses to start with. But when we went on active service, we wore dresses in Shillong, but now we wore green battle dress like the soldiers.
With trousers?
Trousers, with, yes.
Did you have... an insignia for your unit? Did you, or were you with the attached to the particular army, the 14th Army.
Yes, I had the red shield, you know, with the 14th Army.
The 14th Army.
Army.
You were definitely...
to see me here. He'd taken all my father's paintings. My father painted... He lost most of them when they were taken out of Burma, but I had with me about 8 or 10 of them, fortunately. And he has taken those for the museum, the Second World War Museum. I didn't know what to do about it. I offered them to the Burma Star, but they are going to close down, of course, in 10 years, aren't they? They won't be there forever. Whereas the museum, I suppose, will.
Yes, I know he is a collector.
He's going to frame them and hang them, he says. He still writes to me. I suppose it's all right.
Well, I know he does collect memorabilia for his museum.
They've just moved to new premises, and he says there'll be more space and they'll hang them. I got a little booklet made of the paintings, which you can have.
Yes, I'd love to see them.
Which you
I
can
really
take
would.
One if you like. I've got
yes.
more than one.
Yes. But perhaps a little later, because
yes.
This is so interesting what you're telling me. Mm. Talking about the food boats, were you always able to get supplies of food wherever you were?
Or what?
Were you always able to get food? Supplies
well, we
of
lived
food
on bully beef mainly, and tinned fruit and... you could make custard and potato, what you call it, mashed potato.
Was the supply system good? Did it work? You know, you could get...
Well, we always had it, yes. I don't know. It was all pretty efficient. It's amazing what you can make with bully beef, a number of different dishes. And if possible, we had it usually in a big hospital, you have a quartermaster who goes round to buy... used to buy chickens if he could from the locals, or fresh vegetables or any fruit that was available. But mainly it was, we used to have tack, you know, biscuits, and the butter used to melt. It was just water, it was so hot. And we used to get a sugar ration, an old Caspian cigarette tin, you know, with 50 cigarettes. That was our ration. We had an empty tin and our sugar ration for the week. But that melted too. It was so damp. The humidity was dreadful. Everything went green, and we wore gum boots most of the time on the island. And you'd go down to your office, which was a tent or a little hut, and you'd find a couple of cows and sheep sheltering in there to get out of the rain. And suddenly you'd hear a shout in the ward, "Samp," which means a snake. And all the patients had their legs up on the bed while this cobra went through the ward.
That would be a dangerous snake, wouldn't it?
Well, there were many of them out there.
You must have had a tremendous advantage, Enid, when I think of your background.
Yes.
And the places you had been to and the experiences
yes.
you have had. You know, did you find that you coped?
Well, yes, it was sort of familiar. I knew the people and, you know, what they were like. And having been in Burma, Arakan was rather different, I must say. But
yes. Well, what was the Arakan like, you know, that area?
Was just bare, really, the odd tree about, and it was pretty, it was green, and that's all I could say. It rained, and in the distance were trees, and the Japs were not far away, as I say. They could hear their guns going all the time.
But not a jungle area?
No, not where the hospital was. It was perhaps they'd cleared it, I don't know. While I was there, I became due for some leave, and I didn't know where to go, so I thought I'd go back to the northwest frontier of India, where I had friends. It's an awful long way to go, but I used to enjoy those journeys by train across India. They were wonderful, those trains, roaring along in the night, you know, and they ran on coal, and... We used to go for miles and miles, hundreds of miles. But on this particular trip, as we got halfway, I began to feel not very well. And I began to suspect I was getting mumps because I was swelling. You know, I had been working in the infectious diseases ward. And sure enough, I had. And I was in a carriage with a lot of Indian women and children. And I didn't know what to do. I thought, should I do something, pull the cord? Or I decided to do nothing because we were in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And all they could have done was to have dumped me in the... So I just sat tight till I got to Nowshera, back to the old cantonment, and I went to the British Military Hospital, and they said, yes, indeed, you've got mumps, and they put me away in a single room, and I was looked after by medical orderlies, because it was hot weather, and the main hospital used to move up into the hills in the summer, into Sherat, so there weren't many patients there. My friends who heard that I was there used to... I had a friend who used to ride down and bring me roses. They couldn't come in, but they used to come and talk to me from outside. So when I convalesced, they sent me up to Sherat, which is, again, more friends up there. It was all very pleasant. And when I recovered, I went back, all the way back down to the Arakan. It's a very long journey. Train and boat and so forth, train... And when I got back, the matron said, you've been promoted to captain. So I said, oh, thank you, very nice. And assistant matron. Well, it all sounded very nice, and I tried it for a few days. What it meant was I no longer looked after patients. I had to order the meals and think up a new dish with pulley beef every day and put out the sugar ration and go round the wards to the patients saying, how are you today and would you like me to write home for you? It didn't suit me at all. So I wrote to matron-in-chief, Miss Summerfield, and she had rather a lot of letters from me during the war, urging her to move me on. I said, thank you very much. I said, would you mind very much demoting me and letting me go back to looking after the sick? She understood perfectly. So I was demoted back to being a lieutenant and went back to looking after my patients. What happened next?
Was this when you went to Imphal?
Yes,
it have been?
I
your
did
next
go
move?
To Imphal next. It's Imphal and the long journey up, and part of it was by railway, and we went down to the station, and there was an empty ambulance train going, which was lovely for us. We had waited on and had hot baths and real luxury. I think it was, I can't quite remember if it was Guwahati. I think it was Guwahati we went to first. And there was a transit camp there. What they'd done was they'd emptied out the zoo and turned it into a transit camp for people travelling. But they had left behind one poor, sad tiger or tigress, and she lived in a cage in one corner. And she paced up and down and up and down. I felt so sorry for her. Anyway, we spent the night there, and then we... It was an amazing place, Guwahati. It was covered with fireflies at night. All the bags around were covered, and they used to flicker and glint away at night. Then we were picked up by a truck in the morning for Imphal. We spent a lot of time being bounced around in the back of trucks. And it was a long journey. By now we were in the 14th Army. I think we were now 14th Army, and definitely on active service. Lived on tea. I don't think they'd have got by without tea. We'd stop along the roadside, and they'd dig up the earth, make a little mound of earth, pour some petrol on it, and set a match to it. And then you got your mess tin with water, held it over it, and very soon it was bubbling, and you threw in some tea leaves, and we had evaporated tin milk and your enamel mug and some sugar. It was the best tea in the world. But the whole of the 14th Army, I don't think they could have got by without their tea, because we didn't have much to drink. The troops got a ration of 3 bottles of beer a month. Officers got 3 bottles of beer plus half a bottle of gin and half a bottle of whiskey. I didn't drink in those days much. I kept the beer because sometimes the water was awful and beer was preferable. So I was quite popular. I used to give away my gin and whiskey.
What was it like when you got to Imphal? What was the state of it?
Imphal was the most beautiful place. It was this great plain with hills on both sides. There was an airstrip down the middle, and the hospital was a tented hospital. Advancing from India, it was on the right, built in the shadow of the hills, 1,200 beds tented. We were taken to live in the village further up the road. An ambulance used to pick us up in the morning and bring us in to work. I must tell you about a funny incident, or perhaps I should tell you about the hospital first. Our matron was Miss Kelly. She was Irish, and she was very fond of animals, and she adopted a local dog called Tony. He was a Manipuri, I don't quite know what. He was yellow, and he had a long tail. And she made him a red coat, and he went with her everywhere on her rounds. This was 41 Indian General Hospital combined, which meant we had British and Indian troops as well. Again, as I say, they had their own sections and they had the food they liked and that sort of thing. And I was there for quite a long time. We used to go to work and on night duty, and we had interesting experience there. We were visited by Lady Slim, and I was in charge of the British wards this time, and there was a great deal of speculation going on as to whether she would be wearing silk stockings. I went round to all my patients and I said, "Now just behave," because there was betting going on. And so when she came, I went to the door of the tent to meet her, and we walked up the ward together. I was very apprehensive about what was going to happen. And, of course, anybody who could move, their heads were down. If she noticed anything, she didn't say anything, but she was wearing silk stockings, much to their delight.
What was she like, Lady Slim?
Very charming. Yes, she was slim, and, you know, she was in uniform, and she was very good. She spoke to them all and they appreciated it. And in the same ward, I had a patient called, well, call him George. He had a bullet in his chest and he had to go for an operation. And he was very apprehensive, and he asked me if I would go to the theatre with him and hold his hand while he went under the anaesthetic. The theatre sister was rather fierce, and I said I doubted if she could allow that. Anyway, Colonel De Brew, who came from the Westminster Hospital, he's very well known. I think he's died now. I put it to him, and he said, "Of course you must come in and hold George's hand." So I did, and all went well, and it was a success. And then he was sent on to recuperate elsewhere. I've got an awful lot more to tell you. I don't know if you've got time. Anyway, we used to do night duty, and again we had a tent, but to keep warm, we had an open coal brazier, and the odd sheep used to come and join us, and we used to do our three rounds a night and write our report in the morning. And Imphal was a cold place, very misty, Manipur state it was. At night, these mists used to come down, it'd be quite chilly.
Would this have been after the siege when you were there?
Yes, this was after the siege of Imphal.
Was there much signs of what had happened, you know, the sort of battle that had gone on?
Well, it had all been cleared away, and I believe that all the women had been evacuated during that time, but there were only male. I've got a friend in... where does he live? Somewhere, anyway, he writes to me. He was an RAMC orderly. He still keeps in touch with me at the same hospital. And I think only the men remained during the siege, as far as I know. Oh, hello.
Oh, your little bird. Oh, well, he's reminding us that he's there, isn't
That's
he?
That's Hushwing.
Yes, it's... The patients you were getting at Imphal, would these have been coming from the battlefront?
Oh, yes. These were they had horrible wounds, some of them dreadful. Used to come in with their They'd been bayoneted and their stomachs hanging out, slashed across the eyes, all sorts of dreadful wounds. We had malaria, of course, as well, and other diseases too.
Yes. But what had been done for these chaps, you know, having been wounded? Was there anything in the way of a forward dressing station which might have patched them up a bit?
Oh, well, I think all captains and colonels in charge of troops always carried dressings, you know, emergency dressings. They always had somebody along with them who would put on a dressing straight away, and then they'd carry them. I mean, some of them, I'm afraid, were just left to die. They couldn't do anything else.
Yes, were they in a terrible state? You know, I was wondering about being in the jungle. Would they have been very dirty? Their wounds have been very infected.
Oh, yes, they were. They used to come in covered with mud and in a terrible state, covered in blood. And Yes, they were.
And these would have been the 14th Army, mainly, would they?
Well, this was the 14th Army, yes. They're advancing then into Burma. As I say, they saw the most terrible wounds, legs slashed and their guts hanging out and gunshot wounds and all sorts of things. Yes.
Did you ever treat the Chindits?
I can't remember. We may have had the odd one. I don't recollect having them in my ward. I mean, they were there. There were hospitals for them.
They would have had their own hospital, would they? The Chindits, do you think?
They did in Shillong. I don't know about... No, I think they just came into the wards. We had different, all from different regiments. I can't remember now. There were so many. Would you want me to go on about the hospital? There's much more exciting stuff to come. That hospital, I was there for quite a long time, and then quite suddenly they decided that we should move the hospital from that side across the valley into the shadow of the hills on the opposite side. And we thought this was just military difficulty, you know, making trouble. But they had a reason for it, which we discovered later. So we started by flying patients out to India, to base hospitals, those who were not going to recover quickly, to empty the hospital. And we used to go with them, but they never took you unless you volunteered. They'd take you if you volunteered to go. And one journey I went with a Welsh sister, Roberts, her name was, and an orderly who in peacetime ran a nursery garden in Kent, and an Indian water carrier, I forget his name now, it was Barju or something like that. The four of us were in charge of this plane load, and it was a DC-3 we usually travelled in, mainly, and we flew out to the coast, where there was a base hospital. I've forgotten the name of it. We unloaded our patients. We had an RAF doctor on board with us, and he plied us all with brandy on the journey. And we took our patients and saw that they were all settled in this new hospital. Then we were allowed 3 days casual leave. And we wanted to get to Calcutta. So if you went anywhere in the army, you went and hitchhiked. You went down to the office and the RTO was there, and you'd say, I want to go here, I want to go there, and he'd tell you what plane was going. And on this occasion there were three. There was a DC-3 which we mostly travelled, and then there were two Wellington bombers. He said, you can go on any, and I said, I'd love to go on the Wellington bomber, but my three companions wouldn't, and as I was in charge of them, I had to go with them. It was very disappointing. We went on the DC-3 to Dum Dum Airport in Calcutta, and we had a good time. We put the Indian Bisti, a water carrier, we found his unit, so he went in with friends, and Good, Private Good, who was the gardener, he went into the YMCA, and the two of us went into, I've forgotten the name of that grand hotel in Calcutta, it'd come back to me, but it was place where all officers went. And we met friends there and had dinner and we danced. They had a dance that night and we had a good time. And on the third day we had to pack up. You had to be careful not to break your trust. You were allowed, given to trust, to be back in 3 days. So we fetched Raju, or whatever his name was, from his camp and found good at the YMCA, and we all went down to Dum Dum Airport and asked the RTO, said, we've got to get back to Imphal, can you get us back? And he looked through all his lists and he said he was very sorry, there was nothing going to Imphal that day. He said, there is just one possibility. And he said, there's a detachment being flown to Burma behind the Japanese lines. So the other three looked at me, they were not at all keen. And I said, well, we've got to get back, and this is the only way. I said, you better, you know, make up your minds to come. So we did. We got on board with all the troops, and it was rather unfortunate. As we took off, the plane that took off ahead of us crashed in flames, which didn't do much for my companions. Anyway, we got there all right. I cannot remember the name of the place, but it was behind Japanese lines, and that is where I met the Wasbys. They wonderful people. They were everywhere where needed, and they were there with their van of tea and sandwiches. So the troops all got out, and we had to wait for the plane to... I think we carried some injured, I think, and I took some back to Imphal. We all...
Yes, you took the patients back. Yes, it's interesting you saying about meeting the Wasbys. Could you tell me something about them? Who were these people? Were they all women?
Yes, they were. As far as I know, they were a band of wonderful ladies, all like the WVS in London, I imagine. They went all over Burma with comforts in the way of... they had a large van with tea and sandwiches, and wherever there was trouble or they were needed, they were always there with comfort and tea. And
did you see them in other places, Enid?
Did I?
Did you see them in other places?
Yes, at Imphal I met them once. We had an officer's mess. They turned a building into a sort of club for them to go in the evenings, and I met them there once outside with their van of tea. But I didn't come across them very often, but that was a spectacular occasion. How they got there, I don't know.
Yes, they must have driven, I think, if they were in their mobile. And this was well behind the Japanese line.
Yes, I can't remember where it was now. But,
yes. Did you have a feeling of danger being in that area?
I suppose so, yes. I think one ceased to worry by then, having been close to them in the Arakan. I suppose one was surrounded by danger, not worse than London, surely, when they were being bombed.
Was it... were there many women at the front, you know, in Burma? Would it, you know, have been a surprise for the men to have seen women in a situation like that?
No. They were just at the hospital in Arakan. I think there were four of us and a matron, if I remember rightly. Imphal, the first hospital, was... quite remember. I think there were 8 of us and a matron. We had medical orderlies, all trained. Just the sisters were just a few, not very many of us. Down in Tamu, we had only 4 and matron. 2 extra if they were passing through. But
would you have had Indian and Burmese nurses as well?
We had... I don't remember any in Imphal. They were mainly QAs, and somehow, as I say, this friend of mine now, we got posted with them. There were Burmese nurses with the American, what was his name, the American general, that area, they had Burmese.
Stillwell.
In Hoshiarpur, there were a few Burmese nurses trained, and presumably they were in the Burma Hospital Corps, but they all got dispersed somewhere.
Was it important, do you think, for the men to see women? at the front. You know, did it, yes, was it good for their morale?
Oh, yes, very much so. But it was a wonderful feeling because we were rather rare and we were wonderfully looked after by everybody. They couldn't do enough for you. They'd carry your bags and, you know, they'd look after you well. All, whether they were Indian, African or British, they all... but we had notices on the board in the mess tent to please attend as many parties and dances as you can to entertain the troops. And we had the best bands in the world there. All the different regiments had their bands and we danced endlessly. They'd make a clearing in the forest, put down a tarpaulin and scatter borax on it, and we'd dance and dance all night with the great Burmese moon up above, all very romantic.